Torreway, Northwest London, Tuesday the 26th of November, Chof Ches Cheshvan, Rabbi Shlomi Weiss, Pas and Bishul Yisrael, Old and Modern, Part 2.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to just spend a few minutes on Pass, because I didn't get to finish last time, and then we'll go on to Bishul. Just a request, if we can leave questions till after the show, I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have, but I'm going to try and cram in as much as possible in the next 28 minutes or so. So last time, just to very quickly recap, I mentioned that, at least in terms of Ashkenazi Psak, we find that although there was a Gezeira de Rabbanon, was a rabbinic decree not to have the bread of non-Jewish people, this decree didn't really find its acceptance in Ashkenaz, and therefore, generally speaking, we certainly find in times of Rishonim that people in Ashkenaz would eat non-Jewish bread, even really a next-door neighbor's bread. They didn't have to necessarily be a baker. This went on until even the time of the Ramah. The Ramah allows pas palta l'kachila, certainly. He doesn't actually specifically talk about pas palta versus a householder, right? A baker, a professional baker was a householder. The Levush talks about how in his time, not even 1 in 1,000 people had pas Yisrael, and he even talks about buying from your, taking from your neighbor. Over the time of the Achronim, the Shach and many other Achronim tried to push not only not to have certainly pas balabais, meaning your neighbor, but even pas palta. They tried to push not to have pas palta, right? They said Yishmael Machmir, try to have pas Yisrael. It didn't really stick. And in the time of Mishnah Berurah pushed, at least on Shabbos, to try to have pas Yisrael. Okay, again, the reason for this decree is to do an intermarriage. Obviously, bread was the staple food, and they wanted to limit the interactions and the reliance on non-Jews, and so therefore that was the decree. So the question then becomes, why is it that today you won't find any, I'm using the expression from Yid, certainly here, who's going to go out and buy pas palta as a lekachila? And actually, well, okay, I'm not talking in places where there isn't readily available pas Yisrael, but this was another point, which is, to make the question even stronger, there is a tshuva, there are various tshuvas actually, but one of them, it's quite clear, is the Rebbe of Ephraim, who was at the time of Rav Moshe. He points out that today, what we call palta today is even further removed than what would have once been a palta. In other words, palta, the expression palta, is a professional baker. It meant that your local village, you lived in a village, maybe 20 people, maybe 100 people, maybe more, but you knew your baker, right? Your interaction with him is purely commercial, perhaps. But the fact is, you might know his name, you might know his kids, right? Helping around in the bakery. You actually know who this person is. You go and you might wish him a good morning, etc. And on that, we're saying, we're discussing, it's allowed, not allowed. Nowadays, with commercial industry, right, where the way you've got bakeries now, I mean, if you go, first of all, most people, if they would buy pas palta, it wouldn't be from a local baker. And really, small businesses are in decline. And they would go to a supermarket, you get a branded supermarket brand. Again, leaving aside kashrus questions, whether it's kosher or not kosher, that's a separate issue. But you have absolutely no interaction with the non-Jew at all, right? The non-Jew could be in Birmingham or in Newcastle, even no clue. It's done industrially, the guy doesn't even bake it himself. He presses a button and it goes automatically. You have no, what's called, kiruv hadas with this person. Right? You want no connection at all. You know who this person who baked your bread. You pick it up off the shelf and that's it. So in terms of the original Gezeira, there's very little left. It's questionable had Chazal known this situation, whether they would have made the Gezeira. Probably not. However, obviously, we don't just get rid of rabbinic decrees just because we feel that the reason is gone. But Lamaisa, why is it, since the Ramah is Mati Lekachila, yes, Lachorin Mamachma, why are we Machma? The answer is very simple. The answer is that Lamaisa, it is a Machlokes Rishonim. The Sfardi Rishonim were Machma on this, and they only allowed it in, as the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, only when Pas Yisrael is not available, or if it's a type of bread which is not available in Pas Yisrael. And therefore, I think a lot of it is due to the fact that Baruch Hashem, we are in a situation today where, in certainly in Northwest London, or if you live in Manchester, there is no difficulty in acquiring Pas Yisrael. In other words, it's simply a question of there is no difficulty to be machmir for Pas Yisrael. So a person who goes out and says, I don't want to be machmir, okay, so we won't shout at him, but, you know, today, Baruch Hashem, we have more food available of all different types from across the world. There are things coming from South America and Australia. Now, you go to a shop here, the supermarket, kosher supermarket, it's unbelievable what you can get nowadays. What our grandparents, you know, a sweet was a bit of licorice or something. Today, you're just aisles full of the stuff. So therefore, to be makel isn't as necessary. Obviously, there are communities like Switzerland, where there isn't necessarily readily available bread, and people who go there on holiday notice that they are more makel when it comes to the Pas Falter. They try to arrange maybe that someone goes to like 5 million a week, not always possible. You might go to the Alps, you might go on holiday, and therefore, obviously, in those cases, the heter still applies. Now, two more questions before I go on to Bishop. Number one, I have this question about, all the time it seems, about crumpets. So, the KLBD gave a heter to crumpets. Crumpets are a type of baked good which, as far as I'm aware, is not available in Pas Yisrael. So people, I think they have an emotional approach sometimes to halacha. The man says it's mutter l'kachila. However, with the crumpets, there's an extra point which helps, which is that the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yud Beis points out what happens in a case someone who is machmir for Pas Yisrael, and he didn't actually have Pas Yisrael, meaning the bread is pretty much finished. The Shulchan Aruch allows you to return it to the oven. And I'm not going into all the discussion, it'll take too long, but basically you can sort of re-bake your bread a bit. In the case of crumpets, I don't know if anyone's ever had them, but they're not really that nice to eat as they come out of the packet. You are meant to toast them for a good few minutes and actually make them a lot. You're actually supposed to do a bit of the baking yourself. And here it's not just what we call hashlochas kissing, it's not adding some fuel to the fire, you're actually going and making you know, your toaster and making an eish within the toaster, making and baking them. So therefore, for such a thing, that would certainly be mutter chachem. Last question, which I don't really have an answer to, a question I get asked, is that there are other considerations when it comes to bread. We mentioned the fact of availability, obviously if you're in an area where there isn't Pas Yisrael, and also for different types. So for example, let's say, I mean today, even the kosher bakeries are a lot wiser, they have a lot more variety, but let's say you have spelt, let's say, you want some spelt bread for your diet, whatever, certain different type of bread, maybe it's a bit. Okay, so that's a heter. The question is, what about cost implications? So for example, because of the fact that supermarkets or big companies obviously are able to spread their costs over millions and millions of units every day, the cost of bread, Pas Palta, is significantly lower than your kosher bakery. This is really a new question because 50 years ago, 100 years ago, there was no difference really. Was negligible, if any, the difference between Pas Yisrael and Pas Yisrael. You had a baker, you didn't have these mass productions, and there was no real difference. This question is not really addressed by the postcard. I haven't seen anyone who actually rules on this. In Svara, there is a Svara to say that if your Pas Palta is half the price of your Pas Yisrael, there's room to be makel. However, I think you should ask your own rabbinic authority, ask your own posik about such a thing. Lemaisa, I haven't seen anyone who actually talks about this. Could be the Heintzke posikim. There is someone who addresses this. In Svara, it makes sense that there's room to makel for Ashkenazim, certainly. In terms of Sfardim, where the rules are much more strict, and it's really a heter, they did accept the Gezeira of Bas, and it's more coming with heterim. Maybe that's a bit more difficult, but again, each person, if it's relevant ever, a person can ask their own rof. Okay, going over to Bishul, I just want to mention very briefly, obviously there's huge amounts that I can't discuss today. I want to mention, just focus on two aspects of the Bishul. First is the what one has to take into account in terms of Bishul Yisrael, and then secondly, if we can, maybe we'll talk about certain foods like tinned or canned foods. First of all, when it comes to Bishul, it's also pretty much the opinion of the vast majority of Rishonim that the Gezerah was also to do with intermarriage. that one, if one can just simply eat one's neighbor's food, he cooks for him, cooks a nice meal, you go around regularly to your non-Jewish neighbor, and okay, you might have to stand in the kitchen while he's doing it, make sure he doesn't actually put anything non-kosher in, okay, but in terms of kashrus, less certainly, if he's a vegetarian or whatever, you can get around it. The fact is, they wanted to limit the interactions, the social interactions between non-Jewish people. We know the famous Gemara, Gadol Legima, Ayduk Shul Keres Zabrisa. So you have this idea that it's a social lubricant, drink and bread and food, all this stuff, it helps. And they wanted to limit that as appropriate. So there is a Rashi. Rashi and the Mishnah understands it that way. Rashi and the Gemara does seem to imply there's another consideration, which is that if you go around to your friend often enough, you also may eat something non-kosher by mistake. This is a Rashi. This Rashi is a minority opinion. I think the Ruah does bring it down. I prefer to explain it. But the truth is, as we'll see, one of the famous conditions of Bishul, right? What is a problem of a cooked food? Is that we all know it has to be choshev. It has to be something which is, the Gemara's expression is olah shulchan malachim. So it has to be something that is choshev. What difference does it make to me whether something is choshev or not in terms of kashrus? Meaning, if you take something which is not choshev, snack food or some sort of food which is very very, you know, maybe dogim ketanim, the Gemara gives an example, right? It's a small fish. The kashrus of his kalim or the, you know, whether he's going to put something non-kosher ingredient doesn't make a difference how choshev the food is. So Rashi, and there are other questions on Rashi. Practically speaking, if one looks in the Piskei Tshuva, he brings down that the poskim are choshesh for Rashi. We are, even though it's a minority opinion, we do are choshesh. The nafka minna, the main nafka minna, at least the main practical application would be: what about a non-religious Jew? So you've got a person who doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep kashrus, but he's Jewish. So I don't have a problem of intermarriage with this person, right? And it might not be the most there's no issue. He's Jewish, but on the other hand, doesn't keep kashrus. So maybe does the gezerah of Bishul Akum apply to him? So according to most Rishonim, no, because it's an intermarriage question. Whereas going to Rashi, the idea that he might, if you leave him to do all the cooking, he may put something non-kosher in. That may apply, and therefore that's the general practice that we don't insist that a religious Jew be involved in the cooking process for all foods. Okay. In terms of what one takes into account, first of all, the Gemara, there's basically 5 points. Question if all of them halacha l'maisa or not, but there's 5 points. I'm going to summarize as quickly as possible. The Gemara starts off discussing, wants to learn the idea of Bishul Akum initially from a pasuk. However, the Gemara then understands that it's only an asmachta. So in other words, there is a discussion actually in Tosus and the other Rishonim, which came first. Did Bishul Akum come first or Pas come first? And one of the reasons Tosus thinks that Bishul Akum actually is older is because the Gemara suggests maybe it's from a Pasuk in the Torah. Whereas if you... and then the Gemara says, no, it's not. But the fact that it had such a havam in it, the fact that the Gemara thought such a thing, implies that it's an even older Gezerah. Okay, one of the first idea is the Gemara talks about cooking with water. The Gemara has 2 points there. Number one, that like water, it's only something is that it's nishtana mibriyosan, which means that practically, if I heat water and I let it, after I've heated it, it will cool down again. Now, you know, famously, there's a machlokes Rambam and other Rishonim about Bishlach HaBishma on Shabbos, right? But for our purposes, the fact is that if you let it cool down, the water is pretty much the same water as it was before. May have a little bit of oxygen and nitrogen missing, but you're not going to be able to tell. It's pretty much going to stay the same. The Meiri talks about this from tons of Kloyes, which is also in the Gemara. You roast some kernels of wheat. So possibly you might be able to rehydrate them by putting them in water. It's not going to be exactly the same as it was before the roasting, but this is the idea. In other words, it will go back to its original form. You haven't really made a huge difference with your cooking. That might be so. If it's changed, i.e., the Gemara is suggesting, if it's changed, radically, that's a problem of Bishlakim. If it doesn't really change radically from its original form, that's not a problem of Bishlakim. This Gemara, at this point at least, is a discussion in the first Shach in Hilchos Bishlakim. The Shach basically points out that the Arishonim, Rashi, the Ran, and they want to go with this, the Rif, possibly Ran wants to say the Rif. Most Rishonim don't hold this Halacha L'maisa. Certainly the Shulchan Aruch, Beis Yosef, and Dag Mishnah don't hold of this. The reason I'm bringing it up is going to be relevant. So even if we don't say Pasuk at this point, you'll see maybe why I'm bringing it up. The other point is, it has to be, this is a big Kiddush, it's one that many people find difficult to understand. Cooking of Bishlakum and cooking of Shabbos are not the same. But if you look through the sugyas, you will understand that they're very, very different. One of the major differences is the Gemara says it has to be al yedei ha'or, which means it has to be through fire. Practically speaking, that means that the three major examples that are in the poskim, smoking, salting, melicha, or pickling, all these sort of things, these types of cooking, if we call it that, changing of food, is not a problem. The smoking is actually from Yerushalmi in the Dorim. And maybe we'll stop for a second. Smoking. What does smoking mean? When you talk about smoking foods, so some people have suggested that smoked salmon would be allowed if it's cold smoked, whereas if it's hot smoked, it wouldn't be allowed. The truth is, in terms of the Gezeira, that's not correct. The Gemara does not talk about cold smoking. The Gemara probably didn't even know about cold smoking. The Gemara is talking about taking a food, taking it from its raw state, and making it edible. That is talking about hot smoke. It's just that it's hung, you'll hang the food over the fire, and it's not directly over the fire, but there is heat. It's basically heat and smoke together. If you take, for example, salmon, and fish is easier to cook than something like meat, you take smoked salmon is before you smoke it for about 12 hours, let's say cold, you actually have to salt it, you have to cure it for about 24 hours. So you've got melicha, full process of melicha for about a good 24 hours, can be a bit less, can be a bit more. So therefore that's melicha. On top of that, you've got a little bit of cold smoking. The smoking's roughly around 30 degrees, 32 degrees, can be lower. You do it for about 12 hours, you leave it overnight in a smoker, and that's your smoked salmon. The smoked salmon is not actually cooked at that point. You can actually get bacterial growth, which is why you have to pack smoked salmon in these foil packs, because it's not really a cooked product per se. It's edible, but it's not really cooked that well. That's what we have with cold smoked. Hot smoked is different. Hot smoked is, it's a much higher temperature. It's not as hot as, say, putting it in a pot with water and boiling it, but it is hot smoked. The Pashtus is that the Gemara would allow, Halacha would allow hot smoke. So why do you hear Kashrus authorities saying that hot smoke is not allowed? There's two reasons for this. Number one, in smokeries you often have non-kosher fish, for example, eel and other such fish, which you might smoke in the same, it's possible you might smoke it in the same kiln. Depending on what the business is like, you may smoke it at the same time. Hot smoke in the same kiln may be an issue of Kashrus. Secondly, nowadays the smokeries have come up with a chiddush, where basically a lot of them, when they do hot smoked fish, they don't actually smoking it with hot smoke. They don't take wood chips and start burning them and pump the smoke in. What they do is they take it basically into what is basically an oven, and they basically bake the fish. It's not really hot smoking the fish. Really what they're doing is they're baking it. They pump in a little bit of smoke to give it that flavor. That, the Kula Alma is baking your fish. That's just, okay, it's a smoky flavoured baked fish, but it's not called ishum, it's not called smoking. And therefore, that is definitely a problem of Bishlakum. Leaving Kashrus implications aside, any other questions? But that would be an issue. So therefore, and they're not going to tell you how they, this is Kofta Bishlakum, they're not going to tell you when to smoke. So if you're going to buy hot smoked salmon, even though Mitzad Bishl, it's allowed, but there are other questions, and therefore one needs to have a hefsher on something like hot smoked salmon. However, where this comes up practically is the question of other methods of cooking. I'm not sure we'll have the time in the next 9 or so minutes, but there is a tshuva of Rav Vosner and others that there is a discussion. I mean, One example would be microwaves. Microwaves don't actually use... there is a discussion in Moshe and Hilchos Shabbos about Bishul. Is it called Bishul? Derech Bishul? The question of Bishul is not a question of Derech Bishul. The Gemara says there has to be fire. Once there's no fire involved, there's no actual Eish, then the simple understanding is there's no Issa involved. Rav Ozna is Machmeh. If you look in the Tshuva, I think it's Ches, Kuf Pei Hei, I think. I didn't bring a copy with me. But he basically has a shoyl who asks about microwaves, and he basically says, no, it should all be included. It's very difficult to understand Rav Ozna. He actually says, well, you know, if you're going to say, because it's electric, it's different, what about electric cooking? I think he was referring to like electric ovens and things like that. There's a simple answer to that, and that is that an electric oven has heated elements to red hot. And you have red hot elements, that is Eish. So it's very simple why there's a difference between something like a microwave and an oven, electric cooking. Rambam says is Machmeh, and there are those who I mean, as I say, if Rambam was coming as Das Torah, that he feels it's not correct to start making differences and maybe think people make mistakes, etc., I would understand. It's a bit difficult to understand. He's coming to say that this is all included in the Gzeira, it seems a bit strange. Rav Heinemann in Baltimore apparently does Paskin that microwaving is not in the Gezerah of Bishlakum. I don't know if he would then tell you to look at Chilago to have that arrangement, but that's what he passed. So again, a person can ask their own Rav on this point. It will be relevant, as we'll see soon, to the canned foods if we get to it. The next three points in the Gemara are the Gemara has two Amorim actually. One is Nechel Pomeshu Chai, something that's edible raw. So that means, really, what different, again, according to Rashi, it's less clear, although those who are discussing it, it's less clear why that should make a difference if it's a kashrus problem. The Maaseh, you're cooking it, so whether in theory it's edible raw or not doesn't seem to be the main question. But obviously, you don't feel an appreciation for something that really I could have eaten raw. There isn't what we call kirav hadas. There isn't this social interaction. You don't feel grateful necessarily to the person. The other point is that it's called she'enu nechel al shulchan malachim lelafes boyas apas. Okay, there is a question if this is one thing, two things together. What exactly is it? This is a big debate in the Rishonim what this means. First of all, kol she'enu nechel al shulchan malachim. Some people take this quite literally. Now, as they say, you have to see what the queen eats in Buckingham Palace. The Pashto says that's not correct. The Rishonim, some of the Rishonim use the lashon of sorim, which is ministers, basically choshever people. And also in Svara, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. What do I care what the queen eats at home? How's that going to affect that I'm going to Johnny's house to go and eat by him? But I care what the queen eats? I care what Johnny's eating, right? On the other hand, in fact, this is what the Rambam uses this expression. He talks about the definition is something that a person is mazmin olav chaveira, something that you would invite your friend for. So really what many poskim, how they understand this Gemara is that it has to be something choshuv. In other words, it's not just come for some cheap, quick, fast food. It's something where, you know, you mechabed the person. You actually invite them round. You want to impress them. Maybe you bring your boss round for dinner. Or you maybe invite people to your house for a sheva bracha. Something a bit more choshev, where you are actually trying. You're making an effort. Right? But it doesn't have to be literally, you know, like start checking with the White House or Buckingham Palace or whatever and finding out, do you do this? Do you do that? There are those who actually take it out. Many of the American Hashem Anotis actually take this quite literally and start talking about these things, but the Pashtus is not that way. It's not literally what the queen eats. It's something that's very choshuv, something that you would serve at a very, maybe a high-end caterer or something like that, possibly. The question of lelafis boyas apas is a major question, and I'm not going to have this time to mention this. There are three opinions of the Rishonim. I'm going to skip the Rishonim, unfortunately. There is basically, in the Achronim, something of note. The Pre-Chodosh, the Shulchan Aruch, I should say, the Torah Shulchan Aruch bring down this expression, lelafas boyas apas, to accompany bread. Normally, accompanying bread, you would understand, there's a Machlokes Rashi Tosfos, famously about what that means. Does it, is it mean you're spreading on bread, or does it mean at least it's a main dish in your bread meal? The Shulchan Aruch and so Shulchan Aruch add the word parperes, right? Which seems to be, and this is debated. What does parperes mean? In Pesachim we talk about parperes hapas, talk about this by the Seder. It could very well be a parperes is a sort of like an appetizer. It's not part of your main meal, and that's the way that the Pri Chodosh understood what the Shulchan Aruch were trying to say, and he then argues on them. He basically says, no, that's not what it is. And then he goes, brings the Rambam, and he brings the whole sugya, and he says, no, you're saying parperes is even kinuach suda, which is basically the other, maybe the appetizer, dessert, etc. He says, no, parperes is a reference to what accompanies the actual food, something which is a dessert or a appetizer, something like that. It's not part of your main meal, is not included. And then at the end, just after he's had quite a lengthy piece, he then says, ooh, actually, maybe they actually understand, like the Rashba, that actually, no, it's something that is part of your main meal. Which is the way that the Milchus, the Teres Chaim understands it. This is an interesting point, if we don't manage to get onto canned foods. There's an interesting point that people don't know this. In Reb Kiva Eger, the Hagos Reb Kiva Eger, and the Bir Agra, also in Shulchan Aruch, if you're looking at what we would call a standard Vilna Shulchan Aruch, there are huge amounts of their chidushim that are missing. People don't know this. It's quite interesting. If you actually look at the original print of Hagos Reb Kiva Eger, and you then compare it to your standard old print Vilna, you're like, what's going on? So one of the places where something is missing is the first halacha in Hilchos Bishulachim. And there, the Reb Kiva Eger brings down this Teres Chaim, and Pasuk like Teres Chaim says, that anything that's not part of the main part of your meal, anything that's kinuach suda, he says, like mirkachas, something which is not part of your main part of the meal, is not included in Israel. And it's very interesting that I find a lot of poskim don't bring down this Reb Kiva Eger. If you look in the more newer prints, the Habahir, Friedman, etc., they now started reintroducing the missing parts of Bir HaGra and Reb Kiva Eger and others. It's an interesting point. Okay, I'm just going to point out, so that means really, according to them at least, it doesn't include those extra bit parts of your meal. There are Achronim who disagree, the Chacham HaSadr and others, so it's a machlokes. Just to finish off with canned foods, there are, I didn't even really talk about some of the cheshbonos, some of the reasons why this might be allowed. So, both Rav Avadia Yosef and Dayan Weiss, Milchus Yitzchak, write basically the same thing. They basically say, for two reasons, canned foods should be allowed. Obviously, if you can laugh, make better, but they basically say, number one, canned foods are usually cooked by steam, and the steam is like ishun. In other words, you're not actually using direct fire to cook the food. It's cooked within the can, and it's steam cooking it. The other point is that this point I mentioned earlier about the bread, about how it's far removed, it's done in a factory in the middle of some other country or some other city. Although we don't paskin that way in terms of bishul, not like achila, we wouldn't give that as a heta by itself, but they mitzaref those two things together, and they say, since number one, it's not cooked by fire, number two, it is also something that is cooked in a place far away, and you don't have any, there's no kiruv das, there's no shed, there's no appreciation for it, therefore they allow that. The question of tuna is more difficult. We won't go into the tuna, but one of the classic questions that we get a lot of time is about tin corn. Tin corn should be allowed for other reasons as well. Not only these two reasons of the Milchus Yitzchak and Rav Avadia, but also because corn really is nechel chai, which is the way the Americans are. Here in this country, we don't really eat corn raw. However, if you look in the sugya, the Ritva and the Meiri and others, they say that the fact that most people cook something doesn't make it not edible raw. If it's actually edible raw, without any real difficulty, the fact that most people cook it, even the rove, doesn't change that. So therefore, corn is edible raw. Another point is, generally speaking, tinned foods, many poskim hold, most poskim hold that cooking, that these types of mass-produced canned foods are not really that choshev. You can debate that, but that's another point. And the other point I would say is, even if you want to assume, not like the Ritva and the Meiri and others, that since most people cook it, it's cooked, it's a problem. If you actually taste most cooked tinned corn, you'll actually taste it's not fully cooked, actually. And therefore, even if someone were to be machmir over and above Mechsisach and Rabadi, and ignore the fact that it's not really kosher, and ignore the fact that it's Nechal Chai, you could at least have an etzer of taking it home and cooking it further. I think actually it would improve the taste. And with that, I will end. Beaten by the flock again.